Longmarch Project began as a concept in 1999 when Ludier was travelling for a period of 3 years studying at Goldsmiths. He had left China in a state of great concern about the direction of Chinese contemporary art and decided that he would do a lot of research towards what has become known as the 90-page curatorial proposal, which looks towards the historical Long March of Mao Zedong from 1934, the march he did between 1934 to 1936. In looking at this particular moment in history and how ideas of revolution, ideology, notions of persistence, imagination can be reinserted back into notions of contemporary practice, but also in an engagement of how we define what is considered contemporary, thinking about new ways of engaging culture and society. Yeah. The curatorial ideas behind the proposal was then in 2002 actually physically carried out, which saw Ludier with artist and co-creator of the project, Xu Zizhe. They took to the road in a retracing of this historical long march. So they departed from Ruijin, site one. They were working towards Yunnan. And they held particular events at each of the sites that then followed the 90-page curatorial proposal that Ludier had written, which was a tremendous undertaking because this was a journey that saw over 250 artists from China and abroad take part in the creation of new work, in holding symposium lectures, impromptu debates between international artists, local artists, between cultural officials and writers from urban centres. And what ensued was a number of new perspectives and a great amount of engagement about this idea of what art is. And many of these people in these areas had never really contemplated what contemporary art was, let alone how this could actually be a process of re-engaging with their own histories. So the historical Long March has over 20 sites. Only 12 of them were retraced by Ludier and the artists because they realised halfway through that such a philosophical, ideological, sort of social investigation of a particular moment in history shouldn't have a particular ending that mimics or is just an imitation of a prior event. So they decided to regroup in Beijing and they established Long March Space. And Long March Space has become the platform to which we operate as an ongoing entity. So it's our headquarters, that we like to call it. We have several kind of platforms that operate now. So we have Long March Project, which is the overarching name to all of the programs that we do locally and internationally. We have Long March Space, which is our physical platform. It's a gallery platform. It also enables us to employ our staff to be able to carry out the programs we do locally and abroad. Long March Space as a business entity also enables us to legally employ our staff. It's also the base to which we operate as a publishing house, as a facilitatory body for visiting curators from museums, biennales, triennales. It's also a site to which talks, lectures, educational sort of activities or workshops are held. And then we have the work that we do in rural China. We actually also have a Long March office in rural China where we actually work and carry out projects. Like right now, we also are working with people in Yanchuan. So we're a flexible entity that our base tends to move according to what projects that we are doing at the time. So in the beginning, how many people were involved were really very few. It was Ludier, Xu Zizhe, and then a number of people who came in on a project-by-project basis, but we've now grown to a staff of 20, as I mentioned before. That 20 is divided according to exhibition staff that focus on international projects, and then staff that actually work across both departments in assisting the facilities of here and what's required in various venues overseas. So I like to think of us as being increasingly a little museum in many ways, because we also have a collection of work that has resulted from the projects that we've done over the last 7 years. So we're also in the process of training the younger staff in what the demands of having a collection entail, which obviously is of great assistance when you're working with many international museums who have that similar kind of standard. So the social and cultural backgrounds of the project compared to when it first started in 1999 to where we are now, obviously that landscape of Chinese contemporary art has changed immensely. And the Long March project has moved and been flexible and worked and engaged with those changes within that period. As I mentioned before, in 1999, the actual climate of Chinese contemporary art was just at that point where it was taking off internationally. And since then, Chinese contemporary art has been given a phenomenal amount of international attention, not just in terms of academic writing, but also market attention, and in thinking about its broader contribution to the discourse on international contemporary art. I think that that story in itself is very much what the Long March seeks to engage as well, as this criticality, keeping a distance from the certain production marketing levels to which many artists now are employed in China, but actually trying to step back and say, what does this mean? How relevant is it to the ongoing relevance of culture to society? And those arguments are still very much a thread throughout everything that we do. The location of Long March space in the first instance was always in 798, but it was a very tiny office when it first started. One little room with basic makeshift equipment. And now we are one of the largest spaces in the 798 Art District in Dashanze. We have and continue to grow. In actuality, I've just returned and we have two new spaces in addition to what we had in November of last year. So we are constantly growing with what becomes available here in 798 and the demands of our program. The management model for the beginning of the project was very much, oh, if you can do something, then you, great, come on board, we need you to do that. And often you would find one person being a promotions manager, a marketing manager, an exhibitions assistant, and an editor. Now the model has changed and grown in tandem with our breadth of programming. So we now have an editor, and we now have a curatorial assistant, and we now have a facilities coordinator, a marketing assistant, someone that's designated according to each of the tasks. And we all work together as a team. And one of the things here at Long March, though, is that there's got to be flexibility within the roles that you are perhaps employed. And I think that that's one of the main strengths of the Long March project, is that as a team, when the time comes to having to get something done, we all just have to pitch in. And that's a really, we're a little family, really, the Long March project. It's, The structure of the organisation has really taken on most of its change in the last 2 years. In the last 2 years, our programming has seen a shift from accepting mainly invitations from overseas towards actually initiating and being more of an author for what we wanted to project internationally and locally. And that's been a really fundamental and very positive thing for the Long March, because in the beginning it was difficult financially speaking, and also to be able to continue to maintain the energy to say what you want to say whilst minimal staff, whilst also trying to make enough money to keep going is a challenge. But I think the Long March has moved into a different sphere now where we are in a position to be able to initiate and stick to the main philosophies to which the Long March originally began. I would say that for China, the Long March project as an independent organization is the first of its kind to move with the structure of staff that we have. Long March is Chinese initiated, Chinese owned and managed, and that within the landscape of Beijing is unique, and I think perhaps for that matter on its scale in China with the size of 20 staff now. I think as an example, as reference, at any one time we might be working on an exhibition in New York, such as we participated in Performer last year, which was a major project, seeing four major venues, four major new commissioned pieces. And at the same time, we were also launching our five-year retrospective here in Beijing. So in order to pull those very large-scale kinds of events off, our team was able to reflect that we can actually have, we're an engine now to be able to do simultaneous programming at the same time. In the early years, the Long March was very much about, we were getting invited a lot to do retrospective shows about the first project we did, which was called A Walking Visual Display, which is where I briefly mentioned we went on the road and retraced Mao Zedong's historical Long March. And so the archival material that resulted from that and the commissioned new works that resulted from that were often initially in the first few years of the Long March project shown as retrospective form in museum displays. Since then, more and more we're getting asked to participate for the ideas that we seek to circulate, ideas about the discourse between contemporary and modern, thinking about the relationship between production and market. And that's, as I mentioned, a really empowering position to be in. The relationship of how we've changed and how that is reflected or not reflected in the local art scene. I would say that the Long March project seeks to not have a single definition, as opposed to a lot of the other galleries in 798 that are primarily dealerships whose mission is to showcase particular artists for the purpose of the market, whereas we're a multi-platform institution of a kind. Yes, we do need to make money, and yes, we do represent artists, but those artists are generated out of complex, often experimental, conceptual projects. And that is a very significant identity, I think, in terms of if we're to talk about output, in comparison to, you know, as a way of comparing to the local art scene. Our position as an institution in relation to other establishments or organizations, as you put it, the hierarchy of the so-called art world, I would say that I think that the Long March project is, we're an artistically driven organization run by what we like to say a growing family of artists. Yes, we have the Long March team, but it's essential to understand that the Long March would not exist were it not for the increasing number of artists who support and participate and get involved in collaboration with our programs. I think that as a position is a really pivotal one to understand how that drives why we decide to do some things and why we decide not to do others. As an establishment in a hierarchy, I think we would like to say that we would insert ourselves into that hierarchy in particular ways, project by project. For instance, when we participated in Performer 07 last year, we undertook an investigation of questioning of the notions of avant-garde, and we held a backwards march through the city of New York, and we gained approval from Glenn Lowry, the director of the Museum of Modern Art, to actually take that backward march through the museum. And those kinds of hierarchies we're always seeking to challenge and engage on and in levels that make people question, is something going to mean more if you're seeing it in an institution like the Museum of Modern Art in comparison to somewhere else? How do we determine meaning between those two contexts, those two sites, those two very historical moments, MoMA being one of the most renowned institutions in the States? So the focus of the Long March program is very varied in terms of result and output, but the main focus for us is a very powerful thread that runs through all of what we do here, which is about engaging assumption, engaging stereotype, engaging with preconceived methods of thinking, acting, behaving, feeling. It's a process of imagining the relationship that does or does not exist between culture, between society, politics, religion, all coming from a certain fundamental belief that there has to be a relationship between culture and society. We don't specialize in a particular area of art or artists. We work and have worked with artists from central China who are working in the traditional art of paper cuts, which has been going for centuries. And we also work with highly conceptual artists such as Xu Zhen or Liu Wei, whose work is to be seen on the international art market. We then work with artists from the academies who have greatly contributed to the history or the discourse of the burgeoning modern and contemporary Chinese art. And then we'll also work with educational bodies, such as now we're devising a curriculum for the teaching of paper cuts in Yanchuan County. So it's a very varied program. Everything that we do initiate or invest in, we seek to exchange on an international, regional level wherever possible, whether that be through the showing of work, whether that be through invitation to speak, to talk about what we do, or if it's through publication. The idea of exchange has always been a central idea to what the Long March Project has set up from the beginning. An engagement of ideas, if you were to engage with the history of Mao Zedong's thought, he was always thinking of communism, or rather this social revolution, as an engagement with the international. Most of the comparisons in his debates were coming from Russia, for instance. So this engagement with the international, about bringing the international to the local, about bringing notions of tradition to the contemporary, those sorts of relationships and subsequent exchanges are still very much focused upon in the work that we do here. The funding for the Long March is a tricky question. In the beginning, it was a big struggle in terms of being able to maintain that tiny little office with the great assistance of artist support through Lu Jiazhong personal savings. But since 2005, we've been able to continue as an entity, and we haven't quite made profit, but we're able to keep going through external sponsorship and funding of independent projects, through working with museums in the realization of co-commissioning of new work, and also now today through the selling of artists' work that generated out of the projects that we do. So it's a tricky, it's always a tricky, almost crisis point question when it comes to funding, but we're here, which is a good thing. I think for any artistic institution that is independent and has no public or government funding, yes, of course, that affects your program, whether or not you have the funding to do your ambitious vision or not. So the Long March takes that into account every time, and regardless of whether something becomes perhaps compromised as a vision or negotiated as an output, it is still a creative exercise and still very much a reality of everyday life, whether or not you're in art or not. With regard to commercial sponsorship, I think in this era, one must explore all avenues for potential funding relationships, which can often create interesting opportunities for discourse making as well, when you think about the relationship between art and market right now. We maintain our independence in programming increasingly through the fact that we are being invited to act as author, which means we get to choose the artists that we work with, we get to choose the ideas that we want to work with under the banner of being a Long March Project author. So, for instance, in the Yokohama Triennale, we did the Chinatown Project, and we were able to choose that we wanted to work with Zhao Gang, Xie Zijie, Xu Zhen. So there's a certain amount of curatorial thinking there that is of a very important independent nature. The legacy of our organization, I thought that was an interesting question. I think we would like to think that our legacy is offering young and old artists and creative types or not creative types an opportunity to engage with the contemporary that is multifaceted. It hopefully the Long March will be a continuing platform for the engagement of ideas, where people feel comfortable about being able to speak of their own relationship to not only their own practice or their own working, but also what that happens or how that is taken overseas and abroad. We've done also some pretty fundamental educational programs that hopefully also will see some benefit for younger generations. The Yan'an project, which happened in 2006, was a very significant undertaking. The Yan'an project, initiated by Cai Guoqiang, was decided that we would go back to Yan'an, where Mao Zedong's famous Forum on Art and Education talks took place. And we had the support of many academics from Chinese universities who gathered together to discuss the direction of arts education in China. And this was a phenomenal kind of event because there were not only Chinese academics, but it was also attended by some of China's most leading artists. And those discussions were then transcribed and published in Yishu and our own website and our own publications. But this has been a very rewarding experience for understanding that these leading contemporary artists who are participating on the international exhibition and market platform have had an opportunity to re-engage their experiences back into the level of education, in the hope that the continuation of conceptual experimental practice is given relevance in those educational forums. In terms of weaknesses and strengths of the Long March Project, there are many of both. And I think that our strengths are our weaknesses and our weaknesses are our strengths in many ways, if that could possibly make sense. The Long March is in a constant state of powering on, moving forward, getting on to the next project, and I think it would be great to see more time being given to reflect on what we've done. But in turn, each project seems to feed into the next one that we do. And though on the one hand you might like to have more time to reflect and sit down and think, okay, how did this project work? How did this project not work? In essence, by mere being involved, those experiences do inform the next. I think that the fact that the Long March is a flexible entity, in that we don't like to always say, this is who we are, this is definitely what we do, that there is an element of understanding certain projects were failures, that we are in a constant stage of learning, and so therefore that's pretty important to taking risks, understanding that risk-taking is essential to experimental, conceptual undertakings, be they creative or not. The organization in itself is something that could be completely without an office space or a gallery space in 2 years. It might be Long March Capital that sits as a consultancy glass box and a skyscraping building, and there's not a single trace of art to be seen. Or it could be another monolithic Guggenheim shiny building with this time perhaps 100 staff. Or it might be just reduced to an empty office space with the remains, the Long March remains of where we've been. All those options are in our thinking possibilities. And in many ways, I guess we're working towards all three, just as an example. We're in a constant state, I would say, of crises. On a daily basis, I think there would be numerous moments where you would gulp and say, oh my goodness, are we going to be able to pull this off? I need to be in three places at once. Or you hear about an artist's work proposal that sounds completely absurd, and then you realise just how pertinent it is to contemporary society. So I think every day brings a certain point where you are left in a bewilderment, whether that be physically responsive to something or financially mind-numbingly creating nervousness in you about our potential future. But I think the first crisis that came for the Long March was being on the road and realizing at site 12, what happens now? Can a journey, should a journey ever end? If it ends and we reach our destination, what does that say for the creation of ideas? And I think that the fact that Long March space was created at that point was one of the first so-called crises that has opened up our ongoing engagement with the crisis of contemporary life. In terms of where we plan to dream in the next 5 years, I'd say we're dreaming on a daily basis of where we are and what we want to be. Every day churns out new possible configurations, but we don't set a time limit. We're here now. We like to think big about tomorrow and where our imagined future may be by, say, 2018. In fact, we have a project engaging exactly with that idea. But the plan is to keep going, and if we have to grow in order to complete that vision, then we will do our utmost to try and do so. We're a little engine.
Can I just ask you a few more questions?
Sure.
I think it's interesting that you have been, observing, the developments of Long March, but somehow you started working officially with Long March last year.
Mm.
And is this a new position for you? I mean, in Long March? Did someone take this position before?
No, this position was created. Ludia asked me to fill this position. Prior to that, he had been doing, so I'm director of international programs, and prior to that, Lu Jia had been looking after this aspect of Long March projects and increasingly realizing that our programming, of which 75% really happens offshore, needed some assistance. So, as an observer, you're right. I hadn't quite been aware of how much I'd been observing Long March. I had first started correspondence with Xu Zijie in 2003 while they were on the road. And that's how I first came to learn of the project. And since then, I've just continued to keep in touch and in actuality found myself giving talks on them in Australia with my previous job. And Lu Jia, well, Long March was asked to participate in the Asia-Pacific Triennial, which I have been working on for the last 7 years. And it was over that course of working with him for that particular exhibition project that he realized of my understanding and knowledge of the Long March history and my experience in museology, so he asked me to come on board. Yeah, so my role here is twofold. It's to look after the international programs, but then my other half of my title is curator of Long March space, which, I mean, in many ways, many of us, all of us here are curators of a kind, but Lu Jia has this title in place for me because he wanted me to bring my experience of working with collections to the staff here. So a lot of what I do is training in working with the younger staff here about the demands of what needs to be communicated about a work of art in terms of text, in terms of visual imaging of a space, but then also from a registration point of view about looking and caring for a work of art. Those sorts of skills are not taught in universities here quite yet.
And have you found out that in the Chinese art scene somehow it's open in a way, but at the same time you have so many Chinese artists, curators and other practitioners, and in a way the Chinese circle is kind of, you know, consolidates itself. It's a very closely sewed together. And as a foreigner and working in Beijing and in this organization, what kind of contribution you thought you could really addressing this aspect?
Personally, my previous focuses have been on contemporary Asian art, very broad interest, one of which was very much about China, particularly because of I'm half Chinese, but also I'm completely fascinated by the traditions that are regenerating in contemporary ways across the region. When Lu Jia offered me the position, I said to him that I wanted to think about this position as an opportunity to remove the narcissistic gaze that operates very often in China, about China looking onto itself all the time. And he also was very concerned with, and in thinking about that kind of a concept, wanted to always change that relationship. Much of what the Long March does is also working with international artists and bringing them into the Long March programs. So he said that I would have an opportunity to work with contemporary international artists, and I was particularly interested in working with more contemporary Asian artists and bringing them into Long March programs. So that was one aspect of contribution I was very keen to see take place. I've just spent the last 3 months in Vietnam, and one of the projects I was working on there was towards what we've tentatively titled the Ho Chi Minh Trail Project, which will see, hopefully, an engagement of an artistic protest between China, Vietnam, Cambodia and Laos with artists from that region. In terms of commenting on the scene here in Beijing, and I think you used the word closed, I would say that it's a very competitive environment in a way that you would not find perhaps in Southeast Asia, for instance, because of the lack of the market really present there yet. I do think that it's a matter of time. I also think that in China the established scene of culture has such a historical precedence here that it is not surprising that it affects the way in which the scene of art, the contemporary art, operates here. Sometimes, yes, I find it a little overbearing, but I would say that the art world can be very overbearing. I'm sure that this kind of scene exists in New York, and I know it does in London. So I think it comes as part and parcel of the trade, which is an interesting kind of phenomenon when you think, is that a result of the market, or is it a cultural situation, or is it merely about creative minds having this insane ego attached to the notion of creativity? I think those interesting kinds of questions. Mm.
Yes, the Long March has really engaged these very unique positions in Beijing or even in Asia. As you said, as a practice, you're independent in a way, but you also incorporate very independent artistic direction. At the same time, you maintain certain commercial components in it. And how do you see the challenge in it? In a way, do you think Long March could actually set up more like example for reference from others?
As a model of operation?
As an art organization. And I think your Australian background probably could also provide certain kind of information and references. I think in Australia, the artist-run culture has been quite strong too. But I bet you guess there's a very different models. And and the way how Long March has tried to do, would it be a new way as a reference even for Australia or other Asian countries?
I think the Long March project as a model of operating definitely is a very unique one, but I think it is particular to China in that the history of artists working together in an attempt to work and realize an activity has a particular strength. Again, if you look at history in China, the continuation of artist groups to artist groups and the creation of new work is phenomenal. It's prolific. And Long March, in its very flexible nature of working with a whole number of different artists that doesn't depend on exclusivity, but rather idea and project by project basis, that has its strengths, but it also has its weaknesses in an increasing era where artists are signing on to major galleries and exclusivity becomes the norm. I think as a model, definitely we've been, I wouldn't say lucky, I think it's been hard work to maintain what we've done and what we're continuing to do. And it wouldn't have been possible at all were it not for the generosity of our supporters. In Australia, I can only speak for Australia because it's the only other real context of... I have worked in Taipei and England before, but for an Australian network, I think that would demand a lot of an artist that I'm not quite sure really exists in terms of being able to generously give of funds, time and energy in that way. The belief in the Long March vision here is without it, it wouldn't drive, it wouldn't run. The philosophy behind why the Long March began is its soul, if you like. And that's very culturally particular, specific. So I'm not saying that the model itself can't be taken and used and imitated somewhere else, but I'm just saying that the drive to continue is very conceptually based. Yeah.
Do you think Long March has got a very core value of the Chinese culture in it? Because in the very beginning, you also mentioned that, I'm kind of sensitive, you said Long March is based in Beijing. And would that mean Long March could also, open up, new venues or possibilities in other countries or other cultures? And as an international, you know, program director, and how do you see this, you know, possibility of the shift of the cultural focus?
Good question. When the Long March project began, it was definitely positing Chinese culture first, or rather looking from the point of Chinese contemporary attitude, society. And I'm glad you brought that up, because we have significantly shifted in the last 3 years towards a thinking of the international, an understanding that geographic, national, cultural, social boundary needs to be teased, challenged, at times broken, at times rebuilt. And that can only come from an engagement of a movement beyond a certain limit. And so therefore, our attitude is seeking to be less, oh, you're Chinese, but rather, you represent. What are you representing? And so many of the people that we are increasingly working with come from a training that is global. You know, we're working with curators in the States, working with thinkers from India, from South Africa, in an increasing need to say that we are not that far apart from one another, that the social divides between rich and poor, between educated and non-educated, are all relative according to perspective. And so this engagement with locale becomes very significant in how you begin those conversations. So we might do a site-specific project that happens in Auckland in New Zealand, which looks at the lack of a Chinatown in a city heavily populated by a very vibrant Asian community. And you work with artists in engaging with specific ideas about nationhood, about the tourism of culture, if you like. Or you might then go to New York and work with a Chinese artist such as Zhao Gang in an engagement of a new social realism, but it's coming and working from a South African, Black American context. So these kinds of juxtapositions, overlapping histories, is definitely our onward march. It's like what we like to say, our continuing long march. It's an international discovery of imagination that takes us beyond thinking about what and where we've come from, even though it's an essential point of reference, but understanding that we move and migrate in a mobile state of existence now. So I hope that kind of answered your question.
Have you come across any responses to this shift from the Chinese arts community?
I can only comment on what I have heard, and from an observing point of view of someone who's only recently come on board, I find that people consider the Long March project to be one of the few spaces, one of really the only spaces in 798 district, and increasingly some people might say Beijing, who work with museums and biennales and triennale contexts and independent projects overseas and nationally to the extent that we do. And the fact that we work on that international level is why we have the support of so many artists, because our participation is driven by a fundamental acknowledgement of artistic practice and what that does and doesn't mean, rather than thinking only about what that dollar value might be. And so for that reason, we have a certain level of respect, and one that we have to maintain and nurture and not take for granted. But again, it harks back to the aims and initial visions of why the Long March project began.
You're from a museum background.
I am.
And how's that difference, I mean, as an environment to work here?
I was desperate to get out of museum land. I had really come to question the meaning of museums and the production of contemporary culture. I'd been working in the capacity of, you know, a curator within contemporary Asian art in various forms and guises for about 10 years, doing, yes, working in major state organizations, but also personal independent work. And increasingly I was realizing that my contact with the production, with the actual reasons to why artists do what they do, was just so far away. Once you get into the museum context, it becomes much more about how to provide an infotainment exposé rather than really engaging with the motive. And I will say, though, that one thing that I definitely do miss about working within state organisations is that I had the privilege of working at the Queensland Art Gallery for 7 years on one of the most important collections of contemporary Asian art. And that was a complete and utter unique opportunity. And I do miss contributing to that, the opportunity to research and have time to reflect on developments within the region from that perspective. You can't deny that a museum's responsibility must rest in that way. But I was increasingly personally feeling that I needed to get back to the roots, get back to the engagement of an idea at the point that it is initiated, or at the point that it's actually starting to unfold, rather than commenting on it from a complete finished product point of view. And I must admit that I've found it completely rewarding in ways that I didn't receive from the other end. But that being said, it's a very complex relationship. Museums and independent artist organizations are a necessary part of the landscape of contemporary art. For me, it was just time to move on. Mm.
And as you said that, you know, since the time when they was crammed together in a small office to today, I mean, the pace of development is tremendous.
Mm. Mm.
And have you ever thought about, you know, institutionalization? And would that be something you have to value, or good or bad?
I think we like to think that, yes, and becoming institutionalized is something that, from a Western perspective, carries certain connotations. I would say that the Long March is seeking to find new ways of becoming known as that kind of an organization, one that fundamentally wants to remain creative, remains thinking about what they do in an imaginative fashion. Once you become institutionalized, things start to become only about a repetitive behavior. And so what we like to think we're moving towards, and I do think we are, is we want to be functional, we want to be efficient, but we want to know that we're enjoying what we're doing, that we're gaining great inspiration from working in the ways that we are with the people that we are. So I wouldn't necessarily like to say that we're becoming an institution, but that we're becoming a little bit of a bigger family with a bigger set of criteria to fill, and we're just seeking new ways of being ordered in that capacity. In the landscape of Chinese contemporary art, though, I guess many people wouldn't be faulted for saying that we are perhaps becoming institutionalized. But we're all little creative engines in here. I think that unlike many museum-run places and outside of China, a registrar is a registrar is a registrar. But that's not so the case here. Yeah.
Could you imagine Long March without Wuxie?
No. Absolutely not.
So, I mean, in this case, what my questions could be rephrased is, in the long run, you know, after a long period of time, as you said, that you wanted to make a healthy institution. A healthy institution also means that you can work things out without relying on certain people.
Mm. Well, your question is, do you think that Long March, you know, when you think about Long March, do you think about Lu Jie? And
or I rephrase it, could Long March become an institution, could self...
be self-sustained. I think the Long March is definitely moving towards that kind of a model. I think if you think about any legacy, whether it be how the Museum of Modern Art began with a collection of two particular women, or you think about the fact that the Asia-Pacific Triennial began because of one particular Labour government in Australia deciding to give triennial funding, all of those sorts of stories are pivotal to understanding why those particular projects or organisations are still in existence today. But they're no longer here today in the way that they were once. And if you think about Long March, yes, the Long March project is and was initiated by Lu Jie, and very much that idea of beginning the project is fundamental to its ongoing work. But we have many Long Marches now who carry on the mantra of what we are and why we are. And all of us, in many ways, are initiators of some aspect, some platform, some part of what we do here. And Lu Jie is kind of like the big granddaddy at the top. And you'd hate if I called him that. but definitely, the Long March is a functioning body. Lu Jie is very rarely in Beijing. So we all get on with our work. And if we need him, we need him. If we don't, we don't. But he has been very careful in thinking about how he places people within his headquarters, or what it has become Long March headquarters, and definitely the structure is moving towards him being able to, he already has taken a giant step back or distance so that he can now focus on other aspects of Long March that's not so hands-on or daily required work tasks. We're in the process of, you know, he's in the process of thinking about the Long March publication, which is going to hopefully engage with all of the discourse making that we've done since its initiation. And that's a pet project for him that he's been wanting to do for some time. So this organization is now offering him the chance to take on new aspects of the overall vision of what we're doing.